Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. This is the final show of the season, and we have an incredible guest to cap off what has been quite the year, in good ways and bad. It is Deb Perlman, and she is the founder of Smitten Kitchen, the blog, website, cookbooks that everybody loves. And we're so thrilled to have her on Radio Cherry Bomb for the very first time. Deb, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy too. I feel like you need no introduction, but I was reading your about section on Smitten Kitchen, and it really is, it's so funny, and it's so you, and you call yourself the writer, cook, photographer, and occasional dishwasher. You said in previous iterations of her so-called career, she's been a record store shift supervisor, a scrawler of happy birthday on bakery cakes, an art therapist, and a technology reporter. She likes her current gig, the one where she wakes up and cooks whatever she feels like that day, the best. When she's not prattling on about gallery or grub here, what does that mean?
Probably means that I have a typo, which is like very real. I just try to keep it real.
You do keep it real.
Yeah, I just try to keep it real.
Deb is an occasional freelance writer and photographer. You also are the author of the brand new book, Smitten Kitchen, Every Day.
Thank you.
I imagine it's another big bestseller, just like your previous book. I took a look at your tour schedule, and it is crazy. I thought the Cherry Bomb tour schedule was crazy. Yours is really crazy. So where do we even start? It's funny. I said this to you when you were at Jubilee this past April, that everybody knows Smitten Kitchen, but I feel like I don't know that much about you and how you got started just in life. So let's take it way back. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in New Jersey.
Which part?
I grew up in central New Jersey. Uh-huh. I grew up in Somerset. And it's funny because I basically meet nobody from my hometown. I meet people from New Jersey all the time living in New York City, but like nobody from where I'm from. So, well, I guess it's just not that interesting. I grew up really not far from Rutgers University.
Sure.
And
I grew up in Staten Island, which some people think is practically New Jersey. So
I can only imagine like the reactions, the things. Mm-hmm. You must have a nice collection of things that people say because they have no idea how beautiful it is.
They're not nice what people say. If
my son was paying attention right now, he would say, oh, by the way, I have a little guest visitor today. Sorry.
He's playing a video game. I thought he was napping.
He's asleep, which would be perfect. We could just hang out forever.
But Deb said, is it okay that my son's here? And I was like, you're a working mom. It is totally fine.
We're so close to pizza. It just feels wrong not to take your 8-year-old with you when you can. But anyway, he goes to summer camp in Staten Island, and he would be the first to defend it. Like if people say anything bad about it, it's really cute.
Oh, thanks, Jacob. So what was life like when you were growing up in terms of food?
I feel like it was like fairly normal. I would say that my mom, we didn't really eat a lot of traditional Jewish food growing up. I feel like I hear more from readers like, what, you didn't eat this? And it never happened. And I think it's because my mom's family is German, and my grandfather only ever wanted to eat like brisket, noodles, and like maybe a red cabbage salad. Like every day his whole life, like pepper was considered kind of edgy for them to season their food with. And so my mom didn't really grow up with a lot of different foods. And then when she married my dad,
you're talking black pepper, not just like
I'm talking black pepper. I'm talking like she never had garlic. Like it just didn't happen.
Same.
Mm-hmm. It was just such simple food. And then she met my dad and he was eating like Sichuan food in the Upper West Side and all this other stuff. And she decided she wanted to learn how to cook, but she didn't know what. And one day she turned on the TV and there was Julia Child with the French chef, and my mom saw her making like a souffle and an omelet and asparagus, and she was like, that's what I want to cook. And so my mother with this German background decided she wanted to cook French food, and I feel like it probably shows up a bit in my cooking where I'm like, let's make a quiche, let's make an omelet, let's make French onion soup, let's make beef bourguignon, which is not your usual, I guess, New Jersey fare.
Wait, that's so funny, because my mom, she cooked more when I was really younger, but She didn't come from like a big foodie background, but every now and then she would do quiche and she would do beef bourguignon and she loved French onion soup. And I bet it was a thing at the time.
It was the thing.
I mean, this
was
like in the 70s. I don't know. I'm older than you are, but
not by much. Yeah, I think it must have been.
But
it 70s, must have been
early
80s. This moment.
Exactly.
Or if you were looking for something different, and I mean, that was the whole idea of her book was, you know, to bring French cooking home to people with like regular lives, and so that was definitely a big part of it. And then the other thing was that my grandparents actually lived in California for most of my childhood, and so my mom would go out there, and she just loved the California produce. She loved the avocados, and again, the asparagus and artichokes. So I feel like there was a lot of this California thing, and then there was this French thing, and none of the things I was supposed to learn how to cook growing up. But otherwise, it was fairly normal. I mean, we ate peanut butter and jelly and meatballs and spaghetti and, you know, bagel pizzas, you know, all the classics.
The English muffin pizza.
English muffin pizza, that was it.
I think we had very similar upbringings.
Just normal food, yeah.
So how did you start cooking? Did you cook as a kid?
I cooked a little bit, but not really. It wasn't really a huge thing. I mean, I would try to help my mom. She was probably the same way I am these days, where you're just trying to get it done and not necessarily trying to make an activity out of it. But it was mostly when I, you know, became an adult. I put this like the air quotes. I'm like, theoretically became an adult, that I realized I didn't know how to cook anything. I didn't know how to make roast chicken or meatballs, or I didn't know how to turn a can of tomatoes into tomato sauce. Like, I don't know, if you didn't learn how to cook, so I started Googling recipes, and I would watch like Food Network, and I would try different recipes, and I was never happy with them because I've always been really nitpicky. And so I'd start adjusting. That was really where a few years later of Smitten Kitchen came from, where I was like, here's this thing I like to do with canned tomatoes. Here's, you know, I started with this recipe, but I now make it this way, and really just throwing it out there and not expecting that anybody else was going to listen or care.
So fast forward, how did Smitten Kitchen come about?
I just thought I would, you know, have a blog. My first blog was just called Smitten, and I started in 2003. And I mean, this is like back in the dark ages of blogging. You didn't have to have a social media strategy. You didn't have to have a plan or anything. And I just wrote about whatever, life in New York and dating. But I actually met my husband about a month into it. So not so much dating after that. And I just found that I was talking about cooking more and more because we were trying to figure out how to cook things at home. We didn't know how to make anything. And I really wanted to write the recipes down and put them out there. So I shifted over to Smitten Kitchen in 2006. And I really just thought it was like going to be a 6-month website, because who would want to read about cooking from somebody who's like literally making it up as she goes along? And that wasn't what happened.
What did happen?
I couldn't believe it. People started reading it. I'm still surprised. I'm like, really? You guys know I have no idea what I'm doing, right? I'm like completely just like faking it and, you know, trying things out. And yeah, I think I was surprised that I think I wasn't coming at it from an air of authority. I don't have any authority, and I'm not trying to school anyone. I'm not an expert, and I don't really care whether people are cooking correctly or not correctly. I don't care if you're making English muffin pizzas. I love them too. So I hope, if my guess is that it would be that hopefully it was like a very judgment-free space and just real talk about cooking, which is that I hate doing dishes and I hate having multiple pots to wash and my kitchen's really small and I don't have the best knives. And so,
most
of us.
Do you still, you talk about your small kitchen on the website. Do you still have a small kitchen?
My current kitchen is a little bit better. I would say, I mean, for me, I'm like, this is fine. I can work with this. It mostly the layout of my current one is a little bit better, so it feels more open. We moved a couple years ago right within our building to an apartment with a patio, and so there's a glass door in the kitchen, which really lends a feeling of openness and light, even though I have the same 5 cabinets I've always had, like with not enough storage space.
So have you become a better cook
since
you started this?
I definitely think so. I feel like I've become a more confident cook. You know, you get to a point where you're like, wait, I have a formula I kind of like for basic cakes. And then you can look and say, oh, I wonder if I swapped out this with this. You start having more templates to go from, or, oh, I want to make a really soft ginger snap cookie. You know, where would I start? Here's a soft cookie recipe. So you start having more structures for recipes that you know work, and it becomes a little bit easier to tweak them. But I also still have like massive flops all the time. I mean, anybody who walks in the kitchen never has flops. I don't know. They're selling you something. That couldn't possibly be true.
And you started all this before you had kids.
Absolutely. So I started in 2006, and I didn't have this guy over here until 2009. But it was super nice because I felt really lucky at that point, because I got to make it my full-time job in 2008. And it was nice to be able to...
In just 2 years.
Yeah. It just kind of took
walk
off.
Walk us through how that happened.
I mean, basically, I had a pretty kind of like crappy job, like, and that kind of helps because I didn't have a whole lot that I needed to make up for in income. But it was really very much a financial thing where I knew I enjoyed doing it, but I didn't know if I could make it work. But I had an okay job. I wasn't the best at it.
What was
I don't
your
think
okay?
I knew.
Can you tell
my
us?
Last job was I was a staff writer at a technology magazine, and I have some friends that I still adore from that time. But I don't think when I left, they were like, "Oh, Deb, how are we going to make it without her?" I just basically reached a point where I always had ads on my site where the income from it was approaching my salary. And so I made the jump, and it was great because then I was able to build the site a lot more because it was my full-time job. I got really lucky.
So for people who have blogs or who want to have blogs, how did you even get the advertisers?
There's always ad networks. There are always people who are happy to sell you ads. I don't know how much you're going to make on them. You got to look at the fine print.
$1 million.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, who doesn't roll in six, seven figures from, so it really, it depends on who you're getting in. And then of course, as your site grows, you might have access to networks that are just selling to larger sites and makes a little bit, I'm sure you guys deal with that all the time with your website. It was also an easier time.
You're very generous to say that. We actually just relaunched the site. We had a pretty bad site for years,
okay,
and actually just relaunched the site and no That's ad beautiful. Network, no nothing yet. But one day we aspire to Smitten Kitchen greatness.
I have some ideas. it was definitely a little bit better time for web advertising. I think it's a lot harder to make a go of it like that, but it's still worth trying. I still feel like, blogging may not be what it was in 2006 or 2005, but if you have something to say and you want to put it out there, a resume of your writing or your work or your recipes, I still think that self-publishing has got to be the best way to get your foot in a door that wouldn't be open.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your recipes and because that's people love you and they love your recipes. My favorite recipe from your site, I make it all the time, is the hummus.
You do?
Yes, the one where you peel off the skins from the chickpeas.
Do you curse me every time?
No, I don't, because once you know where I have cursed you, it makes the most amazing hummus on the planet. To the point where I have cursed you because you've ruined me for all other hummus.
Oh my goodness.
But it's kind of meditative. So Deb's recipe, and it's built upon someone else's recipe.
Yeah, I mean, I've never claimed to invent hummus. Why would I invent hummus? That would be ridiculous and obnoxious and also untrue. So I think I looked at
thank you for setting the record straight.
Yeah, I'm
you did not
this,
invent
I didn't invent lasagna. I didn't invent baked ziti, guys. I'm not going to even try. I only have things that I like to do that I don't always see everywhere. So basically, I had always had a hunch that a lot of these Israeli and, Middle Eastern restaurants that were having this really ethereally smooth hummus were either doing something to dissolve the skins, and I hear a lot about baking soda. I didn't find it as effective, or they had peeled chickpeas, and it was furthered by there was this place we'd always get like the hummus platters from, and whenever you order chickpeas on top, they didn't have skins on them, and I'm like, that must be. Obviously, they're not using a separate supply, and then they're. So I just started. I mean, I would just drain a can of chickpeas and sort of pop it out. It's sort of fun. Get
it
into
is.
A little rhythm.
Exactly.
However,
I find it kind of zen.
I have since found peeled chickpeas, though. I found them at Kalustian's. I bet Sahadi's has them too in Brooklyn, and they're basically probably a lot of Indian grocery stores might have it too. Chana Dal. Where it's already split and peeled, and it's actually perfect, and it saves you the work. And I will be happy to send you a bag.
Excellent. What are the most popular recipes on the site?
Probably things with chocolate and peanut butter, but there's always like a surprise. There's always like a kale salad that I'm like, really? Wow, that's great. So probably the hummus is up there. Definitely a bunch of, sweets are always going to, draw more popular fervor than, a green bean casserole, but I also, I like having a balance on the side. I don't want to only make things that are popular because I think it would be kind of boring. You would go there and just think, my heart hurts looking at this food.
But what is the common denominator?
I feel like it always surprises me. So sometimes, if it's a three-ingredient recipe that does something magical, three, four, five, it's like, and it's a great recipe, it's almost automatically popular. We are all looking for things that we can make from our pantry, or here's broccoli and two ingredients that makes it amazing. So I feel like those things are always going to take off. But then other things surprise me. There's this chocolate peanut butter cake I made for my husband's birthday in 2008, and I have heard from more people on book tour that make that for every one of their family members' birthdays. I'm like, I have made that like 3 times for him ever. And it's sort of fussy. It's like a 3-layer cake. It has a frosting and filling, and then it has this chocolate ganache over the whole top. And I'm like, this is not a 1-2-3 cake at all. It's quite a bit of processes, but people, I think if people like it, they don't mind the work.
So let's talk about your household. So you've got your husband, your mm-hmm. 2 kids. How do you, and it's interesting because cooking is your work, mm-hmm. essentially. How do you divide your day and who does what chores and what is work and what is family? And I'm sure they blur often.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. You have to really try to make some distinctions. I'm very much a 9-to-5 cook. I do the opposite of what most people do. So I don't usually cook when my kids under. I always try to be honest about that because I'll hear from moms who are like, oh my God, how do you cook with 2 kids? And I'm like, no. I do not cook. You know, I'm just being honest. I don't think it's fair to make people feel like, you know, crap because they're not able to pull off what I'm not actually pulling off. So my older kid's in school, my younger one's in school for half the day. We have a babysitter. This is work. So I tend to, in the morning, do any writing or anything that requires mental capacity. I find I'm a little sharper in the morning, get groceries done. And then usually in the afternoon, I shift to cooking, which is usually when I stop having crisp thoughts. And so I usually cook right through the afternoon until about the time the kids come home, and then the noise starts and I don't remember what happens after that.
So are you the one who cooks for the family?
I am. Although to be fair, my husband, I mean, I do dinner and I probably do, you know, most of the cooking. Family comes over, dinner parties, that kind of thing. It's all me because I love it. Nobody's forcing it down my throat though. Nobody's like, you're a woman, therefore you have to cook. It's like nothing like that. But my husband does breakfast for the kids and he does lunch boxes. So, which is great.
That's nice.
That stuff will wear you down quickly.
I remember our dad made our lunch every day. And he loved making liverwurst sandwiches. Oh. And as a young girl, you don't want to bring liverwurst sandwiches to school.
No, kids are not going to be kind, but it's so good.
Oh, I don't think
you don't hate it.
I don't think I appreciated it back then. And then he would make, there was this thing called deviled ham. It was like some kind of deviled ham.
Yum.
And I think you're supposed to like mix it with mayo or something, but he would like just do it straight mm-hmm. On the white Wonder Bread. And it's probably why I like pate a lot today, but I'm not sure it was actually served up in the right way. Jacob, you could take. Jacob, do you want to talk on air for a little bit?
Oh,
he has the headphones on. Okay,
hopefully he's
maybe
not.
It, before the show's over.
I
we
don't
can
see
get
him,
Jacob.
So I can't see. Yeah, he would love it. He's a real ham.
Oh, good. We'll get him to talk before the show's over.
He's, I think he'll love it.
Busy with his Calvin and Hobbes.
I don't know. It's funny. I'm like, I know this is a job. I don't. You know, the kids do the kid thing during the day, and I'm like, here I am with my kid. But as I said, you guys are next to a great pizza place. How can you not bring your 8-year-old?
I think it's good. I remember going to work with my dad. You know, my mom was, until I was a little older, a stay-at-home mom. But, you know, my dad would bring us, and it was good to see what your parents do, because I remember as a kid, I just didn't know what my dad did and didn't really understand.
Oh, exactly. If your dad's not like a doctor or a lawyer or something very specific, so hard to even remember the words in the right order. Like my dad is a consultant on systems. No, I said that wrong.
I think we had very similar upbringings. My dad had a weird job title and all that. And people would say, what does your dad do? And I'm like, I don't really know.
I'm like, isn't it sort of confusing what adults do? And so I'm like, no, my dad's a doctor. And I'm like, okay, well, good for you.
Exactly. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the business of blogging, because I know a lot of people are very interested in that.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about Smitten Kitchen Every Day
and
the new cookbook and how it's different from the previous one and what we love about this one. And then we might even get Jacob to say a few words on behalf of the Smitten Kitchen family. Before we go to our commercial, I want to thank our sponsor for supporting us, I think, all year long. Le Cordon Bleu, they are incredible. The legendary cooking school, I know you've heard us talk about them all year long. They really have been wonderful and supportive, and supported Jubilee here in New York and so many different initiatives that we've done. So if you're thinking about culinary school, definitely, definitely consider Le Cordon Bleu. Check out their website. We appreciate you supporting the people who support us so we can keep our show on the air. So we'll be right back after this break.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine. And from there, the school was born. In the years since, the Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
All right, we are back with Deb Perlman of Smitten Kitchen. She is in the studio today for our final show of the year. So Deb has a brand new cookbook out. It's called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites, which is such a great subtitle.
Thank you.
What makes something triumphant and unfussy?
So I had a kid when I wrote my first cookbook, but somehow the act of going from one to two kids really somehow, I don't know, I felt like it was all of a sudden there were just kids everywhere and they were always hungry. And I found myself routinely thinking, like, didn't we feed you yesterday? Like, it's a lot of cooking. And you would think, I love to cook, so this should be like my great shining moment in my life and I should be so ready for this. And instead, I felt like I understood for the first time why not everyone jumps for joy when it's time to make dinner. People find cooking to be drudgery. And I wanted to save it. I loved it and I didn't want to ruin it. I didn't want it to get lost in the slog of having to be done every day. And when I looked around at the cookbooks that are out there, I feel like you've got a lot of chefs cooking at home cookbooks and they're great, but they're most of them don't really work for the home kitchen the way they're supposed to. Like, they're great. You might get some great cooking ideas, but in general, it's just not the same mindset. And then on the other side, you've got these like busy moms have to cook cookbooks, and it's fine. We all need recipes from both categories sometimes. But I felt like I was always somewhere in the middle where I'm not just trying to rush out of the kitchen, but I also don't have time to make, you know, a confit from like the lemon tree in my backyard.
Which you don't have.
Which, by the way, I don't have. So in the East Village of Manhattan. And so
you might have a sad tree and some pigeons, but I know for a fact there's no lemon tree in that
backyard.
There's
no lemon tree. Oh, my God, I'd be so happy. Even if they were sad lemons, they would make me very happy.
I'm totally going off on a tangent, but friends who I have in Berkeley, I just think Berkeley is like a magical place. They have Meyer lemon trees in their backyard. They have herbs and all these plants, and they'll go back and they'll snip a bay leaf. And I'm like, what kind of magic
culinary? Just like this is a culinary normal thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you understand how Alice Waters sort of sprung from that land.
I mean, you imagine the things you'd cook if you were out there. It's February, but here's some PHP tendrils. So anyway, I wanted something that was in the middle, but something for people who have busy lives but are looking for inspiration. I really feel like the easiest way to get out of a rut is just not to focus on how many ingredients it is and how long it takes. It would be nice if a recipe paid attention to that for you. And instead, you focus on food that you really wanted to cook. I can't believe this sounds radical, but like, what if we only cooked food we wanted to eat? What if we only cook food? Because when you come home and it's like a completely freezing day, and you want some chicken noodle soup and you make it, you want to do like a victory lap around the kitchen. You're so proud of yourself. And that was the triumphant part, because I really think of the cooking that makes us feel amazing is like the stuff we'll do again. Nobody regrets making something that you felt really proud of and amazed that you could do. I want to focus on that instead.
But you do pay attention to how people are eating today. You have a lot of gluten-free recipes. Are you gluten-free?
No, I eat all the gluten. I'll eat your extra gluten too, don't worry.
But clearly you have audience members who are asking for those recipes.
I would say what I'm doing these days is I would call it like gluten awareness, mm-hmm. which is that if it happens to be a recipe and the only gluten it is breadcrumbs, does it work with gluten-free breadcrumbs? Or I found in the last few years, I actually like latkes, potato pancakes made better with potato starch, which also happens to be gluten-free. So I just feel like being aware of what point people check out of recipes is really useful. I'm not going to change it if the recipe is better with the ingredient in it. But sometimes I just find like, oh, actually this cookie is fantastic with coconut oil. It would be a shame not to mention that for somebody who doesn't eat dairy.
Do you feel like you've made many concessions to to sort of health concerns, to how people are eating more these days?
For me, it's just awareness. I just think that, you know, if there's 2 tablespoons of flour in something, like, does it have to be flour? Is it really wrecked without it? So I'm not really, you know, if it's a bread recipe, it's a bread recipe. And if it's a pasta recipe, it's a pasta recipe. If the pasta works with rice noodles, though, I mean, it's worth noting.
Jacob, do you want to say a few words since you are up and about?
Do you want to talk about cooking? Here, come.
Do you want to say a few words? Why don't you tell everybody your name?
My name is Jacob, and my mom asked me if I wanted to say a few words about me cooking with her.
Do you like to cook with mom?
Yeah.
What do you like to cook with mom?
The thing I usually like to make is, like, appetizer or snack, like challah.
You like helping
salad.
Me. Mm-hmm. Salad. You want me to make that salad we just had at Roberta's? That was really good.
Uh-huh.
That was the best salad you've ever had.
What's your favorite food, Jacob?
Pizza.
Nice.
Pizza. You're in the right place.
Perfectly normal 8-year-old.
That's great. And what's your favorite school lunch?
Pizza.
Burgers.
Burgers.
What?
Okay. Jacob, do you know what your mom does for a living?
Mostly cooks.
She cooks? Okay, what else does she do?
Nothing else that I know of.
Do you know what it means to be a blogger?
No.
No, okay. All right, Jacob, you can go back to your...
Talk about it on the way home.
Back to your games. Mom's going to explain you what a blogger is over lunch.
Oh, boy, there's going to be some good bedtime stories tonight.
So, okay,
back when the web was new.
So that's a good transition. So you are a blogger.
I am a blogger.
I noticed some bloggers are distancing themselves from the term blogger. I don't know if you embrace that or don't embrace it.
I'm kind of on the fence about it just because I've always thought of blogging just as self-publishing. And it's generally always been described as a style. And that's because most of the early ones were more diary-like and more journalist. But I think in the end, it's just a format to self-publish. And so if you're somebody who is not getting your foot in the door in a magazine, and I definitely wasn't. Nobody was going to hire me to write about food because I had no resume or ins or anything to write about food. You can start and publish your own food magazine. You can get it started and get yourself out there. So I always, I guess maybe because there is this idea that it doesn't need to be the way it was defined in 2006 or 2002. No, it's what I do. I mean, I don't work for anyone, so it's definitely still my own thing. And I definitely write in a more, you know, personal, like, you know, it's journaly way. So it fits.
So let's talk about how you actually make money as a self-published individual these days. It's not easy to make money doing what you do. Like, you really have to hustle.
You have to. And I would say I got in early and I was able to build an audience when the landscape is a little bit emptier. So I always, you know, I don't want anyone to like feel bad that they're having trouble, you know, doing what I did in 2006, in 2017. That said, it was really just ads. I made money the same way every magazine and newspaper has since the beginning of time, which is that I had content and I put ads between it and around it. And the more traffic you have, the more impressions the ads get and the more you can have income. So building the site means that you can build your income.
Social media has changed a lot for the bloggers because people aren't going directly to sites as much as they used to.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're finding this too. I mean,
we didn't build our site for traffic and we didn't really ever put content on our site. So it's a different kind of beast. But yeah, how are you adjusting to the new social media era?
You know, I think it's that really people want to find you where they want to be versus necessarily going to your site. It's tricky because I can monetize my site. I can't monetize Instagram or Twitter or whatever unless I want to like sell posts, which I don't want to do. So
you don't do sponsored posts?
No, I don't do any sponsored stuff.
Wow.
I don't want to. I mean, again, you know, this is not a judgment upon any way that people feel like they need to make money, but it was never right for me. I have a little bit of a journalism background. It always just felt really uncomfortable to me. Plus, I'd be really bad at it. I mean, I just always felt like I hope to keep being able to do this with ad income. And then if I can't do it anymore without income, I'll go back to it being a hobby and then do something else. Because it was just, I like doing it and I enjoy it and I'm thrilled that it gets to be my job. But I don't know. I didn't want to have to start chasing sponsorship money to do everything.
Wow. And so you don't do sponsored posts on your website either?
No, I don't do it at all. Wow. So okay. Basically all my focus just goes to, maybe not the last 2 months have been the best example, as I've been traveling a lot and it's just me, so it's been a little quiet. But in general, all my energy goes towards putting new recipes up, keeping the site up to date, and keeping the content, you know, fixing typos and answering comments and just trying to keep the site like a lively place to check into.
Wow. I'm really impressed because I feel like that's one of the only avenues to make money.
It's really tricky these days. Yeah. And that's really just where it's gone, where you can make a lot more money being a brand with a voice than you can with ads. At the same time, I'm like, I feel like I'm okay. So wow. I'm not
you're
like,
turning away money.
Really have a small apartment. Sometimes I think it would be nice to have a bigger apartment. I wonder if I should have like sold more things. And I think about this stuff, but I think I'd be really bad at it. And it's always going to be a little uncomfortable for me. I want people, again, this is not about other people. This is about what works for me. But I really want when people hear from me that they know they're speaking to me. And I feel like if I use that same voice to sell something, it's really hard to sound like myself at the end of the day.
Well, I'm impressed. So, Deb, what is next for Smitten Kitchen? Your book tour, by the time this airs, your book tour will be over.
Yeah.
So.
A nap probably. And then, I really miss the site when I'm away from it, when I like cooking. I like playing around with new recipes. Like it's the holidays. I'm like, my God, there's no hot buttered rum recipe on the site. And there's no, I want to do these soft ginger snap cookies. And I don't know. I just want to get back to doing what I'm doing. And I hope I can do it for as long as I want. I mean, I think that's anyone's hope with their job, that you can do it, find something you like to do and to be able to do it as long as you find it fun and for it to not get sick of you before you're sick of it. But I don't have any plans to stop doing what I'm doing.
Oh, I remember when I worked at Yahoo Food, cookie searches were huge mm-hmm. in the month of December.
Huge.
Do you find the same thing with your site?
I definitely find it. I will say I don't spend a lot of time looking at traffic and data because that's a good way to make yourself insane. I know there are people who love to look at that stuff, but I don't want to be like, well, I can't talk about an endive salad this week because it's always really unpopular when I really want to talk about an endive salad. I think it's good to be aware that you can, if you do an entire site dedicated to like maybe anchovies, fennel, celery, and walnuts, like maybe only I will read it for you. But so I think it's good to be aware. But at the same time, I try not to drive myself too crazy. But yes, cookies, cocktails, a good holiday punch, things for work luncheons. I feel like there's a lot of potlucks luncheons at offices and there's no oven facility. So it's like, what can I bring? What works well at room temperature? I could get a lot of questions like that this time of year.
Huh, okay.
Edible gifts for teachers and coworkers.
What's
and
a good edible gift?
Can't really go wrong with toffee, spice nuts. I feel like definitely jarred stuff is great. I mean, if you are on the West Coast and you have your lemon tree, you should definitely make some preserved lemons or some lemon marmalade for me, mostly me. I mean, I guess you could share it with other people, but I want it. So definitely, you know, fresh fruit and preserves are really great. But I feel like just a candy or...
You can't give teachers cash?
Do we do that? Is that a thing?
It's probably frowned upon.
No, I don't think it is. It's very strange. I don't remember this from growing up. Maybe my parents shielded me, but straight gifts are pretty not uncommon.
Yeah, I don't think we gave gifts to teachers back in the oldie days when I was.
Imagine if we just paid them fairly and then we didn't have to, you know, grease the wheel.
Paid them fairly, paid them really well.
Yeah, they should be the best paid people.
Teachers should be the best paid people. One day. One day. So, So you've met a lot of people on the road. I mean, we were on tour for the Cherry Bomb Cookbook mm-hmm. and met a lot of people.
How was it? Did you like it?
I really did. I met a lot of people who are listening to the show. I met a ton of entrepreneurs, a lot of people who told me they quit their jobs because of Cherry Bomb. And I was like, oh, gosh, that's a lot of pressure. But I'm happy you're following your bliss because that's always really important. Mm-hmm. What kind of people did you meet while you were out there?
I met a lot of just like really nice home cooks. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just so friendly. And I know that sounds really like I'm brown nosing, but I'm just being honest. There was never an irate person. There was never a person who answered too loudly or whatever. So I found a really nice group of people with a real interest in the world and also cooking. I think that a lot of people who read cookbooks as much as they cook from them, who were really in it for the stories, and maybe they already know how to make this the way they want to make it, but they really like to read the story about it. And just a lot of people trying to figure out, like, I used to love cooking, and then life got really busy with work or family or whatever. Like, it gets really hard to cook, and trying to figure out how to make it so it's still fun. So you don't just start to dread it when it's, you know, it could be nice. It could be your escape from the day. And I definitely heard from people who said they find that when they get into a recipe, they like, it's great. They turn off Twitter. They turn off the news, which is really important in these times to get a little break from it for an hour a day.
What was one of the most popular questions during all the Q&As?
Definitely people want to know what I'm doing next. And then I'm like, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to go anywhere else. I feel like I'm supposed to have some plan for world domination and like a line of dishes, but I really don't want to. I'm a little bit lazy, and I just like doing what I like to do. And so my goal has always just been to keep doing the parts that I enjoy as much as possible. Maybe like a little world dom. If I could fit world domination in like 2 hours a week, I would definitely do it though.
I don't know that there's a recipe for that just yet, but if there was, we'd probably find it on Smitten Kitchen. Well, Deb, I just want to say thank you for coming by. Thanks for bringing Jacob. It was fun to meet him and hear from him. Deb's new book is Smitten Kitchen Every Day. It's both of Deb's books are really beautiful and wonderful, and they really are a great addition if you are a cookbook collector or just a really avid home cook. And her website's great.
Thank you.
I love reading your website. I love trying your recipes. You changed my life with that hummus recipe.
Yay.
I've made it for a lot of people and blown their minds.
And now I'm going to send you some peeled chickpeas and make your life even easier.
But I like the peeling.
Okay,
it's very meditative, so I don't actually mind doing that. It does take 4 hours to make, you know, a cup of hummus, but
so good though. I mean, it deserves to be a star though. Yeah, you're not smearing that on a sandwich. You're like, this is hummus as a star.
Yeah,
good.
Exactly. But anyway, thank you for all the positivity you put out in the world. We really need that these days. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being a champion of home cooks everywhere.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's really nice to hear.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone who listened to Radio Cherry Bomb all year long. We love all of you. Don't forget, Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported network. You can go to their website and support them. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate to help keep this station that we love so much on the air. Thank you to our producer, Allie Mish, and our engineer, Dave Tadashore, for making every episode of Radio Cherry Bomb possible as well. And again, thank you to Le Cordon Bleu for supporting us all year long. They've been a really wonderful sponsor to work for. Go check out their website, cordonbleu.edu. And if you are going to any of the cities where they're located, London, Paris, Ottawa, be sure to check out all the wonderful programs they have available. That's it, everybody. Have a great new year. You are the bomb.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Nicole Schatz, and I'm an illustrator. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Sarah from Sarah's Vegan Kitchen. She's super cool and super creative, and you should definitely check her out on YouTube.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.